gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to Broken But
Glorious.
Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward.
Hello and welcome to the Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined by the author of A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE and One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, Oliver Newman. I didn't see even an Oliver.
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks Chris. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And we had so much fun on our WrestleMania review, we decided to invite him back. It's the Indie Hard Mafia's Thomas Bjornsson.
Hey guys, how are you guys doing?
I'm brilliant, thank you.
Yeah, good, thanks. Awesome. Thomas, how are you?
I'm great. Always a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, so where's Eric? Are you still friends after your match on Friday?
Well, we are currently in the middle of a divorce, so things are a little bit rough, but I feel like, you know, if we work on things, we might be able to pull it together.
Is that the reason why Eric isn't on the show tonight?
It's a little bit of a... it's a little bit of a restraining order, so he has to stay at least, you know, 3 phone calls away from me. That's sad times.
So those that know, Eric and Thomas had a match in the Zebra Cup semi-finals on Friday.
Hello, Piper. you have a crown in your hair, and I don't know where it came from. Okay. Well, Piper might be joining us for this podcast. You're the queen?
Yeah.
Backlash.
No, before that, Thomas, the greatest Royal Rumble.
Oh yes, the greatest Royal Rumble.
Yeah. And just before we go any further, great to have you back, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Missed you, buddy.
Oh. Yeah, fella. Tough couple of weeks in work, so but it's been good. Yeah, not liking this 6 weeks till the next pay per view though. We worked out our schedule at the beginning of the year. It's like one every 4 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like one every 3 or 4 weeks is the way they were going.
Don't like it.
But, yeah. I'm sure we'll have enough content on the channel, Chris.
Yeah, I'm sure we do. But
yeah.
We'll find something to do. We've come up with some ideas.
We'll have stuff to do, interviews, obviously with pro wrestling.
As Oliver mentioned, before we get into the review of Backlash, we didn't get a chance to do a Greatest Royal Rumble review because I was too busy last week with work. So, Thomas, do you want to give your thoughts on it as a whole first? Rather than do individual matches.
As a whole, for what it was built for and made to be, I think it was fantastic. It helps the WWE, you know, reach newer fans in Saudi Arabia who have never seen the product before. You know, clearly from reports that, you know, were said, they are greatly out of touch wanting guys like Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, Yokozuna.
Yeah, that's apparently that's why that, I can't remember the sumo wrestler's name. They just put him in because he wanted Yokozuna.
I feel like they might need a little refresher. They might need to put the WWE Network in Saudi Arabia, but
so the Prince stopped watching wrestling in 1995 or something.
They have old VHS tapes.
Don't knock the VHS tapes, lads. Those were the greatest. I've still got them. I've still got a VHS recorder. I'm proud. I don't care. No.
I think I have one VHS tape, and it actually is a wrestling tape. It's the Royal Rumble 1996, which is the very first WWE event I ever watched. I think that's quite literally the only VHS I still own today.
Yes, it's a bit of controversy coming out of it. There's the whole women's can't wrestle, that's a cultural thing. I could see, well, the Prince has said he wants to change the culture, so I could see maybe next year they might let a woman be a manager, and then maybe the year after.
Absolutely. That's the thing, is they were offended by, you know, promos that the WWE showed, and, you know, they didn't allow women to wrestle, but in another one of the video packages, there was indeed a woman, and a woman doctor nonetheless, being shown prominently, and it confuses me as to what they're actually going for, because you're going to sit here and praise this woman talking about how, oh, women were just given the right to drive, but then, you know, absolutely lose your minds over them showing a WWE promo with the women superstars. Like, I don't understand.
I'll say, because it's meant to be a 10-year contract, so maybe in, let's say, in a couple of years, it'll be a women manager. Maybe in a couple of years after that, could have a mixed man, mixed tag, and then by the end of it, we'll have women's matches.
Something along those lines, definitely.
Yeah, what did you think of some of the completely random entrants, like Dan Mather, who was he on NXT for 5 minutes, who got beat up by Samoan Joe? I haven't seen him for 2 years.
I mean, he's recovered well.
Yeah. 2 years to recover.
Oh.
And he was that?
Well, yeah, like, a lot of the entrances were definitely surprises. Piper, if you don't stop hitting the dog... I looked over and I happened to see my daughter aggressively petting the dog. So I was quite worried for my dog's safety. A lot of the entrances were really, really surprising. Yeah, I quit.
The only thing I could think of was possibly they knew they wouldn't know a lot of the current stars, so they thought, let's just throw lots of big men in and lots of different shapes of men.
Absolutely. Give them a shot, you know, especially with such a huge payday. Like, a lot of those NXT kids, like Dan Matha, a perfect example, like, you'll probably never see a payday, that large again. Nothing against his talent, but it's just the way the WWE call-up system is, you know, you never know when you're going to make it to the main roster, if you ever make it to the main roster. It's one of those, we'll see what happens afterwards things.
Yeah, another the confusion on both of the championship matches. I don't get the double count outs ending to the Nakamura AJ.
I had no problem with it. It was arguably the better of the matches that they've had for the WWE Championship. The cage match between Reigns and Lesnar, truthfully, I feel like it wasn't supposed to happen the way it did.
It does look like it's a botch. I don't know how they expected it to happen. It's like, does he expect him to spear him and he just falls straight on his feet?
Right. And I think it's honestly made for a better story than, you know, what the original outcome would have been. I feel like now it's the, Roman should be the rightful champion thing. I feel like that's going to help give Roman the credibility he needs at the moment. Because let's be completely honest, Roman Reigns has lost a ton of momentum since the beginning of this program with Brock. And it's not Roman's fault. It's truthfully, like, just the way they're booking it. Roman has nothing to do with it. Roman's doing everything in his power to make the angle work.
I think it's quite obvious that they just wanted Brock to break CM Punk's record, because he does it just before Money in the Bank.
So
you'll probably lose it at Money in the Bank too, bro. I think they've worked it out that way.
I can agree with that.
Oliver?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what Thomas said. In terms of the event as a whole, I guess it's the first step. It's been said after the event that they're looking to make women more involved in sports events in Saudi Arabia going forward, and if this was the catalyst to that happening, then it's a good thing. In terms of the matches that jumped out to me, I enjoyed Kalisto against Cedric Alexander. I honestly thought that it should have been Mustafa Ali, and if you wanted to make a statement in Saudi Arabia, then change the title to Mustafa Ali, because he fights for the people and he's fighting for to walk down a path and to allow other people to follow it. I thought it would have been a great opportunity to change the Cruiserweight title, even though it changed hands so recently. So I was surprised he didn't go down that path. I think, much like what Thomas said, the Styles Nakamura match was better than WrestleMania, and I'm happy with the ending because it's building story. We all know they can perform once they've got the story behind it, and then it's going to blow the roof off the place wherever it happens. That's the absolute key thing. And then from the greatest Royal Rumble perspective, I loved how long Daniel Bryan was in the Rumble. I love the way they teased different confrontations with like Chad Gable and Kurt Angle. And for a show that was kind of, it had a bit of a house show vibe, I think it delivered. I think everything that they did was, was a pretty solid show. That's what I said about it. It was a cool show. It was, something different, something we're not used to on a Friday afternoon here in the UK, Chris. You can understand that.
I can't wait to get home. Yeah. I try and get home as close to 5 o'clock as possible. So
exactly. So it was really cool in that instance, and I hope it's the catalyst to significant change in Saudi Arabia, and WWE could be at the forefront of that, and that'd be perfect.
Apparently they're going back in November, so it'd be like the greatest Survivor Series. I don't know how it's going to
work. I can see that.
Right, idiots, you're listening to Mr. Williams. Now don't be an idiot yourself. Get listening, get liking, get following the Broken But Glorious podcast.
So before we get into the Backlash review, there was no tag team title matches on the card at all, not even on the pre-show, so Tommy has a tag team competitor. Is this a burial of the tag team division, or is it just they're just literally?
No, I truthfully don't think it's a burial of any sort. That's one of the problems that the WWE always had with the joint branded pay-per-views, is that there were too many titles and not enough spots on a card. And yes, with them having their own network, you think that wouldn't be an issue. But again, fatigue comes into play. Viewers may not want to sit there and watch a 5-hour show after watching a 5-hour show after last month's 5-hour show. I think that's a lot of WWE's problem, is they have so much great talent and not enough places to put them. So no, I don't think it's a burial. Just like they probably won't, do this at the moment, but there was a point in time where there never used to be women's matches on the cards, despite having two women's titles.
Yeah.
I don't see them doing that now with how they've pushed this women's revolution, but, it's a thing that happens, and it's not going to happen every card, but, to call it a burial would be extreme, especially when they have put such a large highlight on the division recently. With teams like Hardy and Wyatt, you have, the Bludgeon Brothers over on SmackDown, the Usos, the New Day. Like, they have such a strong core of tag team competitors that for it to be any sort of a burial or notion of it being a burial would just be ridiculous.
So I think they could have told the same story with Owens and Zayn if they had them challenging for the titles. Have Hardy and Wyatt acting really weird, so that's why Zayn wanted to walk off rather than getting beaten up, maybe. But then you wouldn't have Braun on the card, I guess.
Yeah, and if you don't put Braun on the card, Chris, you get these hands. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Well, should we kick off then as Seth Rollins defeated The Miz? I thought this was an absolutely brilliant back and forth opening match. The crowd was hot. There was really great near falls. I loved how Seth has been booked recently, kicked out of two school crushing finales. Yeah, it was a really great way to kick off the pay-per-view, and I really enjoyed it.
It was a great, great opening match like that. You could have put that match anywhere on the card, and it would have been absolutely fantastic. The fact that it was the opener and set such a strong tone for the pay-per-view, like, that is a credit to their performances. Like, it was amazing to watch.
I love it.
Yeah, usually, like I've said on previous podcasts and stuff, I like to go with the cruiserweights to open the show, and like Thomas has just said, this match could have been anywhere. It could have main evented the pay-per-view, for example, and wouldn't have been out of place because it was absolutely incredible. got to go down as one of the greatest opening matches in WWE history and in pro wrestling history, probably. And one of the best matches I've seen this year. So, absolutely incredible.
I think that'll be quite sad, because I reckon when it comes to our end of year like awards, we'll probably forget this match because it's on such a poor pay-per-view.
Totally, we don't. Yeah.
Next up was Nia Jax versus Alexa Bliss. I thought this was okay outing from both. So there's a little bit of decent drama built by Bliss possibly winning. I think it was a bit weird.
The story is definitely better than the matches have been.
Yeah. I didn't like the match as much because Bliss had a lot of offense in this match. And it doesn't make sense having this huge woman and this tiny woman. And the tiny woman gets loads of offense and nearly wins.
It's that classic, bad guy, good guy. Like the good guy gets beat up on by the bad guy. Like it's just that classic story arc. And I feel like they could have done it better.
I think a more interesting story could have been when Alexa Bliss knocked Jax out of the ring and she couldn't get it back in. Ending it on a count out could have been a more interesting story. Then Bliss could say, I won, but I literally couldn't pick you up. So.
I think in this situation, the message of kind of overcoming whatever you're dealing with in life is an important message to tell.
Mm.
And obviously they're doing it through this women's title feud. The match feels like a bit of an afterthought, really, and that it shouldn't be that way, but it felt that way. I thought it was of a good standard. Bliss and Jax have good chemistry. I think it probably hurt the match going after that IC title. As we're going to discuss next, the next like segment probably should have been inserted into this part of the pay-per-view, and the women's title match should have been moved to where the segment was.
Yeah,
in my opinion, I think that would have helped.
Yeah, I'm getting the impression of Nia Jax, they kind of booked her up to, she's got to win the title at Mania, and they went, we don't know what to do with her now.
Yeah, I'm concerned because of, obviously, she's won the title from Bliss, she's now beat Bliss in the rematch. And I'm not somebody who watches Raw and SmackDown because I don't have access to it. I watch pay-per-views. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, who's going to challenge her next?
I honestly think that they're going to, with them bringing back the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, I truthfully think that it'll be a shorter reign with Money in the Bank happening in June. Mm. I say Bliss and Jax get one more go at it at Money in the Bank, and then the Money in the Bank winner cashes in on hopefully a retaining Nia at that point.
Yeah.
Because then it'll just create a new story and they can continue, their feud, away from the women's title. Because the women's title doesn't need to be involved in that.
Do you think they'll cash in on the night then, Thomas?
I mean, it's happened before. We've seen people win the briefcase and then cash immediately in. So
Dean Ambrose said it recently, didn't he?
Dean Ambrose did it, didn't he?
Dean Ambrose did it, Kane did it as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been done before.
Could be interesting compared to how Carmella had it for just under a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you went the opposite way. Especially there's rumours there's going to be 3 Money in the Bank matches. I'm not sure how they're splitting them up.
They're going to do a men's, a women's, and a tag team,
Tag team Money in the Bank?
I believe so, yeah, from what I've read.
Could be interesting, maybe. Depends how many teams they put in. If they're going to have 12 men in it, it's going to be like 6 teams.
I just hope it's a better match than the tag team Elimination Chamber.
I thought that was quite entertaining for what it was.
Yeah, for what it was, but with the talent involved, it kind of disappointed.
Yeah, the next up was Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton. I thought it was a solid back and forth. It was pretty slow. It's reminded me of wrestling 10 years ago compared to what it is now. Again, it was short, 12 minutes long, and it was a clean victory for Jeff Hardy. I'm not sure what they're going to do with Randy Orton next, or what the future role for him is.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure where the direction for Randy Orton is going to go, because he can honestly be placed anywhere in the card, as shown by this U.S. title match, and be perfectly fine. But it's just a matter of, does it make sense? And that's the thing with being a veteran like Orton, is he can camouflage himself so well into any place in the card. that is hard to sit there and say, oh, well, he's not really doing anything, when he is constantly, you know, present somewhere.
I think an interesting storyline for Randy Orton, because obviously he was the legend killer, wasn't he? Well, now he's kind of going towards legendary status. So maybe someone gets plucked from NXT and goes up against Randy Orton in a feud. That might be quite cool.
I could see that.
Yeah, there is a rumour he wants more of a John Cena-like schedule, so he'll just turn up on the big shows.
Yeah.
I think after the time he's put into the business, he's kind of deserved it, hasn't he, really? And it'll mean more if he's around less.
Yeah, he could come.
That's what he wants.
If he came back and did like a Chris Jericho thing where he came in and put over the younger guys.
Exactly, because, you know, I don't see what more he can do to increase his legend, apart from help the younger guys.
Mm.
And I think it'd be really nice if he did that, because if it wasn't for the likes of Mick Foley, you know, would we be talking about Randy Orton in the way we do nowadays?
To counter that, I feel like we would. Yes, Foley definitely helped define the Legend Killer character, but also look at what he's done since then. Like, he's moved so far past that. Well, yes, that was a great match and a great feud with Mick Foley, but, you know, his fate was written in the stars well before then. Like, he could have done the same exact thing, you know, given a few years with Triple H, which he did. He and Hunter had a great feud back when they did the whole home invasion gimmick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was a great feud, minus a few of those small little quirks.
Mm.
So I don't think Orton's legend status has ever been questioned, but I definitely think that those little things like the Foley feud have increased it. I think I would still be talking about Randy Orton that same way. I can't say the same for somebody like Edge, who truthfully, his greatest defining moment was, hey, I'm going to go sleep with my best friend's girlfriend. And then, you know, it turned into a major storyline, and that's how he became one of the greatest villains in WWE history. Yeah, his tag team work was great, but would we be talking about him as this great singles competitor had those little coincidences in life not happened? It's not the same for a guy like Randy Orton. Like, Randy Orton's third generation, and I feel like they would have booked him to be a stronger talent because he had the look that Vince loved. You know, he had the charisma. He had everything. He had the talent. So it's arguable to sit there and say that we wouldn't be talking about Orton the same way today if, you know, Mick Foley didn't help him.
Fair enough.
Again, where do we see the feud going from here? Do you think this is the end for Orton versus Hardy, or Hardy will move on to somebody else?
That's tough. I would love to see Orton somehow, you know, get into the WWE title picture again with, you know, new crop of talent that's there.
Because
I think seeing Orton versus Nakamura for the WWE title would be great. I think AJ versus Orton for the WWE title would be great. So hopefully he's thrown into the Money in the Bank somehow, and we get that possibility.
Yeah, the main event built around Orton, Bryan, Nakamura, AJ, just for the next year would be amazing, I think. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of possibilities on SmackDown Live. I mean, yes, that's what makes it look like it's going to be the best show of the two, in all honesty. I think just going back to how the match ended, with it ending with a clean victory for Jeff Hardy, it's probably the end of this, you know, series of, well, it hasn't been a series of matches, this like really short-lived feud. I think Hardy will defend the US title against somebody new, and I'm hoping that, yeah, Orton can go against, say, Andrade Cien Almas or something like that. Would be really cool.
Hmm.
I think that would be a fantastic match, yeah.
So, with next up the Elias segment, I've got it written down.
It was, yeah, Chris.
Did anyone find this entertaining? No. I like Elias. They just kept it to his bit where he came out, slagged off New Jersey, and go.
I think if it was Elias and Rusev, I think it was perfect.
Oh, they just had an Elias versus Rude match, if that's the whole point of it. Then have Bobby Rude twerk, and my son found it hilarious, but I didn't find it very funny.
Yeah,
it was a lot.
It went on for so long.
It, It's whether you enjoy the sports entertainment aspect or the professional wrestling aspect of wrestling. If you enjoy the sports entertainment aspect, you'd like this. If you are a pure professional wrestling fan, you'd hate this.
I'd like this if it was on Raw. I'm glad I didn't pay £20 for this pay-per-view and have things like this in it.
Yeah. Like I said, if it had been kept to Elias and then Rusev interrupts him, I think that's perfect. I know they're on... No, he's still on SmackDown Live, isn't he, Rusev?
Yeah.
Yes. So you can... Oh, no, Elias is on Raw, sorry. You can't really do anything past this show. Obviously, you could possibly have a match between Rusev and Elias because they did Raw versus SmackDown on this show, if you remember correctly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it had been Elias and Rusev, based on the popularity of both characters, it would have been good. It's when the New Day was added and No Way Jose and Bobby Roode and stuff, it got a little bit out of hand.
Yeah, I just didn't find it entertaining at all. So, next up was Daniel Bryan versus Big Cass. He defeated him by submission in under 8 minutes. So I thought this was fine. I can't remember anything that happened in the match, really.
Can't remember anything that happened in a match as well. But the finish and what happened afterwards are honestly the only important parts of that match, if I was to be completely honest.
This is how I saw the match. Big Cass beat up Bryan, then went off and did a pose. And then Bryan did one of his signature moves, and then Big Cass beat him up again, went off and did a pose. And then Bryan did a signature move, and then he submitted him. That's my memory of the match.
It's about accurate.
I think in this situation, I just remember the submission victory and thinking, whoa, what happened? I mean, I was watching it with a friend of mine, but we were so surprised at how quick. It didn't seem like 8 minutes to us, I can tell you that for a fact. It seemed like it was blink and you might miss it. And then obviously, Bryan gets the win, and we were deeply concerned that Big Cass would get the win and by hook or by crook, any kind of way. We did not want Big Cass to win the match. It needed to be a Bryan win, and then obviously after the match is where Big Cass got his licks in, isn't it? So, pretty good booking all around, I think, in the end.
But what's the point of the feud continuing if Bryan's already won?
He's beaten him. He attacked him after the match.
He's beaten him in under 8 minutes. There's nothing to prove.
I got nothing.
About this point, my son put his headphones on, and I know he's bored when this happens. He doesn't usually get bored. Which didn't help when next match was Carmella versus Charlotte, which just seemed to be 9 minutes of headlocks.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't the best, but I think the real telling sign was Carmella getting a clean victory over Charlotte.
After she just beats Oscar, and they've been building up for weeks. She can't do it. She needs the Iconics' help to beat Charlotte, and then the Iconics don't even come out.
Exactly, and I think that's one of the big turning points in their feud because it gives Carmella some kind of credibility as women's champion. Because I think that's the issue with every Money in the Bank cash-in winner is that you didn't beat them legitimately. You know, you had to wait and. You know, beat them down. Even the case with Rob Van Dam, who, you know, said he was going to cash in when he did.
Yeah.
But still only won because Edge speared John Cena. Like, it's always one of those pressing things of, well, you cashed in, now do you deserve to have it? And I think that this match against Charlotte and her winning clean the way she did, taking advantage of, you know, an almost always flawless Charlotte making that one mistake was perfect and gives her some kind of credibility behind her reign. Even if it's just the one time, like, it's still something.
Oh, there's a conspiracy theory going around that she only got a clean win because now Carmella's seeing John Cena, apparently. So, that's a conspiracy going around the interweb, I saw.
Well, then, that's news to me.
But, I thought they could have, after Charlotte missed the moonsaults, I think they could have played on that for a couple of minutes, similar to what they did in the first match. They did a similar thing.
Rather than just go right to the finish, yeah. I agree with that. But even then, for the story that they were telling, I think it was perfect.
Yeah, but I still think the Iconic should have distracted Charlotte. So going from defeating Oscar to losing to Carmella just doesn't make sense. So.
I think in this situation as well, if the Iconics distract Charlotte, you could build to a feud between the Iconics and Charlotte and Asuka. You could have Charlotte and Asuka kind of, reluctant partners to an extent, and you could have probably moved Becky Lynch into a feud with Carmella over the SmackDown Live Women's title. So if those things had have fallen into place, like you said, Chris, you got a couple of feuds there. But no, they've gone the other route, and Thomas explained it really well. It does give her some credibility and, you know, legitimizes her reign to an extent. So, yeah.
Alright, so next up was AJ Styles versus Nakamura, ended in a no contest.
So many people hate the finish of that match, and I don't understand why. I honestly thought that it was perfect, because in a no DQ match, it literally means that no disqualifications. Weapons are legal, you know, you can't be counted out, but you can be counted down.
It's the same thing, though.
That's what people are forgetting.
I think it's the same thing. Sorry, Chris. Same thing as the Chris Jericho Kenny Omega match from Wrestle Kingdom, and he reached the ropes when he was in the Walls of Jericho, and they were like, okay, why is he doing the rope break in? Was it an ODQ match there as well?
I think so.
Yes.
And people were confused at why there was a rope break in an ODQ match. So I think it's just. The knee-jerk reaction to it is wrestling fans not completely knowing the rules of an ODQ match.
Yeah, but they say it's
you can be disqualified for not breaking a five count, holding the ropes. That was a major argument from the Omega Jericho match. But no, that truthfully should not have been a thing. However, if you fail to reach a 10 count to stand, you know, the ref can call the match, because it is indeed, like was tweeted out by Jason Ayers, a concern for the superstar's safety. And while there are no disqualifications, and they could have done whatever the hell they wanted to each other inside and outside of the ring, if neither competitor can stand, the match can't continue. They were incapacitated. Like, say that happened on the outside where, you know, Nakamura beat AJ so bad with the chair that AJ couldn't continue. The ref would have called for the match, and Nakamura would have won. Not by disqualification, or AJ wouldn't have won by disqualification. Nakamura would have been declared the winner because AJ couldn't continue. Both men couldn't continue after not making the 10 count. The match is over.
So by technical knockout or by knockout in this instance, much like when Kevin Owens carried on pop-up powerbombing Sami Zayn on NXT. Way back when.
Yeah, and they gave Owens the belt because Zayn could not continue. He couldn't make it back to his feet.
Yep.
Still finished. They need to explain it better if that's going to happen. Because they always say pinfall. This match can only finish by pinfall or submission.
So. Yeah, I think they've got to explain it better. I think, once again, the other thing that jumped out in this situation is we've now seen three matches between Styles and Nakamura, and they've got progressively better over time, but they haven't reached that pinnacle that was Wrestle Kingdom 10, I believe. So, like I said, when that happens in WWE, if it ever does, it's all this is all going to make sense because it's built a great storyline, and the match will blow everyone away.
Now, here's my argument with that. It truthfully might have happened at WrestleMania, but we're so used to one style being shown on WWE television that we don't realize how great that match actually was. Because, you know, there's a huge difference between New Japan and WWE style. So, like, it all means that could have been the pinnacle, but we set our expectations so high to see what we saw at Wrestle Kingdom 10 that we undervalue how great that match was.
It's a fair point.
So I think we're gonna have to make double dick kick city t-shirts thing. The next one.
We've made every other t-shirt, Chris. So why not?
I think My only other problem is AJ Styles looks like an idiot because every time he gets into the ring with this guy, he punches him in the dick. So why isn't he wearing a cup? For the last month, all he's done is low blowed him. So just wear a cup and one hit, which just makes him look like an idiot.
That's actually what my fiance said, is why has he not learned to use a cup yet? Like, this has happened every week since WrestleMania.
That's going to be
just wear a cup.
That's going to be the spot at Money in the Bank. He's going to low blow him and he's not going to sell it, and then he's going to put him in the calf crusher or something.
Like that's what I think. It's like, he'll get the low blow, and AJ will fake sell it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Nakamura will look up at him, and AJ's just like, nope, she's him in the head with the cup.
One of the best things that Bret Hart did in WCW with Goldberg, wasn't it? When he had
the metal plate for the
screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so good.
So, yeah, anything like that would be fantastic.
The next up was another complete disappointment of a match. I thought Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley versus defeated Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
So, can I just... let me start this off by saying I am super disappointed so far in Lashley's latest WWE run.
He just feels like another guy. It's nothing special about him.
Yeah. Like, they don't let him use the jackhammer. They're not letting him use the spear. He's stuck with the stalling vertical suplex, and that would be great if it was the 80s.
Yeah.
But you see so many stalling vertical suplexes, you know, week in, week out, that it doesn't feel like anything special. It should not be a finish. Not for somebody that strong.
Yeah, and they haven't done like the, oh, this guy's been gone for 10 years and he's won hundreds of titles around the world. It's just like, oh, Bobby Lashley's back. Hooray.
that was essentially me. It was... Oh, awesome, Lashley's back. Cool, okay, he's using a vertical suplex. I understand they don't want him to use his finish yet, that's fine. And then the next week, he uses it as a finish. And I'm super disappointed now. Like, Lashley was always one of those guys that had the it factor. It was just never applied properly. Like, it's not that he was pushed wrong, because they gave him all the momentum in the world. Like, from the U.S. title to the ECW title twice, to, you know, the feuds with Umaga and John Cena. Like, they gave him every opportunity. And I just feel like he's just a cog in the WWE machine. He's nothing special as compared to his run on Impact, where he was the man. Like, Lashley improved tenfold from his WWE time. And now that he's back, it's like he doesn't know who he is.
The feud against his trainer made me really want to see that guy's ass get kicked. So that was incredible performance in Impact Wrestling, if you saw that, Thomas.
I did.
Yeah, brilliant.
We reviewed that, didn't we? I'm sure we did. Did we review it? Is that Crossroads?
No, this was before Scott D'Amore and Don Callis took over.
I'm sure we reviewed it.
Okay.
It was me and you talking for half an hour, Nick, not being able to say anything because he didn't watch it. I think it'll be just...
We might have then. Yeah. It's probably escaped my memory. It is almost 5 to 11 a night here in the UK, so you've got to... I apologise if I've made a mistake there.
No, I'm just saying, I don't watch a huge amount. I'm trying to watch more of Impact Wrestling, but trying to find time to fit another 2 hours of wrestling.
It's definitely time to get on the bandwagon, Chris. They're really turning it around. It's 2 weeks in a row, obviously, for the Positive in Pro Wrestling episode that I've done. They've nailed it 2 weeks in a row. And if they keep going, the Crossroads was really good. Redemption was even better. And the TV's getting really good as well. So, yeah, get on the bandwagon.
It's there waiting for me to watch. I record it every week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just finding 2 hours.
In terms of this match... I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. Just because of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and what that's going to lead to.
I don't want them to break up. I think they're amazing together.
Yeah, I think that I don't want them to split up. But at the same time, when we're able to see another level kind of matches between them in WWE, obviously we've seen it in the past. The roles might be reversed this time around. I can't wait for them to lock up, in all honesty. It should be really good.
at the main event was Roman Reigns vs Samoa Joe. This match started off great with Joe attacking and running wild everywhere, and then seemed to put him in a headlock for 10 minutes and lost all the momentum.
I truthfully love this match.
Did you?
It upsets me that the crowd wasn't behind it as much as they should have been, because...
Apparently the show had ran over nearly 20 minutes by this point, so everyone was like, oh, I need to get home to beat the traffic.
Yeah, I understand that. But at that same point in time, it's... You know what you're signing up for at this point with the WWE Network, having that platform. You already know that they're going to go over. You know it. It's just, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that I feel like Roman Reigns is being punished by the crowd, even though he's gotten so much better in the ring, and so much better on the mic, and becoming so much more of a character, and it's so weird, because when the Shield reunited, they were all over him. They loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just Roman. Like, there has to be something else that the naked eye can't see. Is he rammed down our throat? Yes, but so is John Cena. And yeah, you get the battling, Cena sucks, let's go Cena chants. But at the end of the day, John Cena gets a reaction. John Cena draws emotion from people, and so does Roman Reigns. And I don't think it's fair to sit here and for the internet wrestling community to bury Roman as much as they do. For him becoming so much better than he was.
See, the thing is, in this situation, Thomas, if he was to turn tomorrow, he'd be the most popular guy on the roster.
Exactly. Everybody will not get what they want, and they hate it.
What the scenes are trying to do, they're trying to do what they did with Hulk Hogan, where they bring a monster and the monster beats him up for 80% of the match, and then he does his four moves of doom at the end and pins the guy. That's what.
I think with regards to this match, it's a good match. People are probably annoyed that it wasn't the Styles versus Nakamura in the main event, first of all.
Being the fact that it was the only world title match on the entire card? Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. It devalues the title straight away, doesn't it? So that's where the annoyances come in. But if you look at the two matches on their own merit, if you had put that match on last, Styles Nakamura, with that ending, the fans would have been absolutely livid, even more so than Reigns beating Samoa Joe.
I agree with that, but I also think that if it was the main event spot, that wouldn't have been the finish. I think they would have done something else. I think AJ might have won clean somehow. Or Styles clash on top of a chair or something like that.
They could have had a similar finish, but then Nakamura gets up and does a post-match beatdown, so the last memory isn't two guys lying on the floor holding the dicks. Nakamura gets up and sasses him a couple of times.
I think you've just got to find a way for Nakamura to win the match without winning the title, unless he wins the title to obviously continue it. So
he has to win the title the next match between these two.
Yeah, well, the next match is going to be kind of a last man standing kind of match, isn't it, in all honesty? I don't think
that's the case. I think Nakamura gets into the Money in the Bank, and then he cashes in on AJ after AJ retains over Samoa Joe or something like that.
Yeah.
This is the way I picture it. AJ Styles stands victorious over Samoa Joe after a hard-fought battle. From behind, oh look, it's Nakamura with another low blow. Here's my briefcase, Kinshasa.
You'd have both Money in the Banks cashed in on the same night. Oh, is this?
It's never been done before. This is only the second women's Money in the Bank match, and they didn't do it before with the Raw and SmackDown briefcases that they had.
No.
So, WWE is all about making history and making moments. Why not?
Could they really throw Joe straight into a title match after he's lost two matches in the ring?
I mean, he's been claiming, going after the belts, so I don't see why not. He sat there and said that after he wins the Intercontinental title, he would be coming after Roman Reigns if he won the Universal title. Mm. That didn't happen. And now he sat there and made claim to the WWE title. So, I mean, it's not that Samoa Joe's not a formidable threat. Samoa Joe is one of the few main eventers I feel that are being downplayed, but he's so good. Like, we all know how good Samoa Joe is. Hmm. But I feel like the WWE Universe in itself, while they see Joe as a formidable main eventer, the brass team doesn't see it as such.
No.
And I think that's what he needs to do, is he needs to have a fantastic match with AJ to put him on the mark, and then, hey, he can, you know, stay in that spot. He can essentially be the Roman Reigns of main event spots for SmackDown.
He should have been the guy that beat Brock Lesnar back at Great Balls of Fire last year, in all honesty. They built it up so well that he could have taken the title and no one would have batted an eyelid. But going back to this match, the way Joe was talking in the, you know, the build-up and stuff about Reigns losing confidence, you could have quite easily done Samoa Joe winning the match, Reigns passing out instead of tapping out, and you could have done, you know, obviously not with the double turn and stuff, but something very similar to Steve Austin and Bret Hart from WrestleMania 13, if you wanted to get Reigns across as somebody who's resilient and, you know, never says die. So you could have changed this result around, and I don't think Reigns would have lost anything.
I would have had to.
In hindsight, I don't think Reigns would have lost anything, but I think the issue with that is the crowd. I don't think the crowd would have been behind Roman. I think that's where the problem lies.
Are the crowd behind Roman, though?
No, absolutely not. That's the issue.
Oh, like, okay. Yeah, okay. Because you want sympathy on Roman for passing out, yeah. They would have probably chanted, "You deserve it," wouldn't they?
They want to end the pay-per-view on Samoa Joe getting cheered.
Especially when they're trying to build Roman up as the guy, and they've been trying to do that for so long. Something like that would absolutely just kill his career.
I think they just
already in the process of being such.
They need to completely rethink how they're booking Roman, because they seem to have the goal is he's the guy, but they haven't figured out what small steps they need to get.
I honestly think, you know, if you were to build him up from the start again, have him lose a bunch of matches and start over, then he'll get back to this point, but they refuse to do it, or to take him off TV and bring him back in, you know, in the future kind of thing. But once again, it goes to show what WWE thinks with regards to Raw and SmackDown, the two Raw versus SmackDown matches, because obviously the Superstar Shake-Up, Raw won both of them.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right. Hey guys, this is the Project Thomas Brewington, and you are listening to the Broken But Glorious Podcast.
So what were your thoughts on the show as a whole?
As a whole, I think Backlash was a decent pay-per-view. I think the pay-per-view fatigue definitely sat in, having Mania, Greatest Royal Rumble, and then Backlash right after each other. I think that really might have hurt the excitement for the show.
Being in America, would you have been disappointed if you spent $50 on the show back in the day?
Oh my god. that would have broken everything.
So do you think that WWE thinks we can do these type of shows because people are already paying $9.99 for them?
Yeah, like honestly, I mean, you can put on a show every single day of the month if you wanted to, if you're WWE.
Yeah.
as long as you have that network, nobody's really going to sit there and complain. People will still watch it. They'll complain, but they'll still watch it.
That's how I try to think of it. I try to think, if it wasn't on the network, would I be happy if I paid pay-per-view money for this?
No. And that was another big issue, too, is when they were doing the original, you know, brand extension, where they had, you know, a Raw pay-per-view, and then 3 weeks later, a SmackDown pay-per-view, like, back in the early 2000s, before the network. Like, that would never work now.
No.
Never work now.
I think if you look at this situation, I'm not sure about what the US currency in terms of pay-per-view rates is, Thomas, so fill me in a second. But, Chris, this would have been £15 to £20 in the UK?
£19.99, I think.
Yeah, and would it have been worth it just for the Miz versus Seth Rollins?
No.
When it all comes down to it?
No.
Yeah, it was an incredible match, but, we're way past the point of one, you know, one really great match shows. There needs to be three or four out of the, you know, the six or the eight matches for it to seem like a worthwhile investment. But because it's on the network, you can give it a little bit more leeway, I think. If you were paying good money for this, people would be up in arms or
in the US, it was equivalent to, like, I want to say regular pay-per-views were $39.99, I want to say.
Mm.
And then WrestleMania was like $50 to $60.
Wow.
So I don't think that it would have been worth it, like, in the long run, especially on a monthly basis. I think doing the networks is probably the best thing that the WWE has ever created.
Definitely.
Just because of, you know, the amount of content they can put, and they can control their own hours, their own content, you know, broadcasting time. I don't see that working back then. I don't even see the $9.99 format working back then, because not everybody would have had access to, you know, whether it be cable or something like that, or, you know, just something like that. Because remember when they had, I don't know if you guys even had it in the UK, they had a service called WWE 24/7, which was like a predecessor to the network, where they had, like, all the old classics and stuff like that. And they ended up shutting that down because not everybody was going to pay extra money on their cable bill to have that special service.
No, I don't remember having it over here.
I'm not sure if we had it over here, but I remember knowing of it.
I remember them talking about it on the shows, but I don't know whether we had it.
Yeah, it was, like, here, it was $7.99 a month for, like, old-school WWE programming, like, old WrestleManias. Like, it was basically the network, like, before the network existed. And so many people didn't want to, you know, add extra money onto their cable bill just to have that. And now you look, you know, so far into the future, and here we are paying $10 a month for the WWE Network for the exact same thing. So why didn't it work then, and why is it working now?
Well, it's a different age these days. Because people paid, it's over here, it's £8 for £8 for Netflix, and then so much for Hulu. It wasn't a thing back then. You pay extra for something.
I think the world's gone on-demand crazy, hasn't it, really, when it comes to wrestling, definitely. Every wrestling promotion, and this isn't a dig at any wrestling promotion, but they're on-demand, and if they're not on-demand, people wonder why.
Yeah.
Obviously, with Netflix, when it regards to films and TV series, you've covered that, Chris. So, yeah, it's very much the digital age, whereas in, I'm going to say, early 2000s, was it, Thomas, for WWE 24/7?
Yes.
It's before its time, probably. It's
a different age, isn't it? So that's probably why it didn't work then, and it is working now.
Yeah, I see that. It's still odd to me, because, you know, you had people pay for movie subscription services like HBO and Cinemax and Showtime and stuff like that, you know, but it was so hard to get pure wrestling fans or sports entertainment fans to.
But were the pay per views on this 24/7? Was it just classics?
No, that's what I was just about to say. I think that was a major thing as well. I think that if the WWE had added pay per views into that service, I think they would have lost more money than they did. But at that same point in time, it would have been groundbreaking, and you might have had even more subscriptions, just like how they have with the network now.
My argument to my girlfriend was, we paid $19.99 a month for the pay per view. So it's just $9.99, we get everything. So that's how I got around to it.
And she can't really argue against that, can she, Chris?
No.
In all honesty. But yeah, I think if the pay-per-views had been involved in the WWE 24/7, it would have worked, definitely.
Yeah, so you're 24/7,
that it was an add-on.
Yeah, so $8 a month for this add-on, plus you have to pay $40 a month for the pay-per-view.
Exactly.
That's probably why it didn't work. So we've kept you half an hour longer than we said we would, Thomas.
Absolutely fine.
So, thanks for joining us. Where can people see you in the future?
This Friday in Brockport, New York, I will be at IWF. The next day, I will be at LPW in Fremont, Ohio. I don't remember the rest of my bookings for the mall.
He's fantastic.
Well, when I figure them out, you can follow me on Instagram at Project Brewington, where you will see all the posters there.
Yeah.
And, nice save there, Thomas.
I try.
Yeah.
So this new gauntlets you glove you seem to be wearing, is that going to be a permanent thing?
What was that?
The Infinity glove thing you're wearing at the moment. The Infinity
my Infinity wrist tape. Yeah. It is how I control the wrestling world, and I love every second of it.
So I've really enjoyed having you on the show again. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so thanks for joining me, Oliver. So if
you're welcome, and thanks for joining us as well, Thomas. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, so
pleasure is mine.
Again, so if you enjoy our show, follow us on Twitter. It's at BBGWpod. Oliver, you do the Instagram. Is it the same?
It is, yeah.
And we're the same on Facebook. So like us on
Facebook. We are indeed.
So, and we'll see you for our review of Money in the Bank. We think we've planned 2 shows, but we haven't definitely decided what the topics are yet in between, because we didn't realise we were going to have a 6-week break. It was meant to be Payback in like 3 weeks, but we've cancelled that show. So, it's on my schedule. Payback.
Typical.
So we will we'll have 2 more shows plus millions of interviews, will we? We've got a couple lined up.
Probably.
We've got 2 more with Cody Johnson, sorry. Where did I get Jody, man? Corey Johnson.
Jody, yeah, because of the Jody Foyish interview I did, I think.
So 2 with Corey Johnson, 2 more. I interviewed Mr. Williams tonight. That'll be out next Tuesday. It's a really fun interview. So we'll see you again for the Money in the Bank review. Good night.
Good night, everyone.